Good afternoon, guys. So I'm not really going to talk so much about crop rotations, a little bit more about some of the cover crop mixtures in Oklahoma. This is a piece or a component of my PhD dissertation, and so I'm just going to kind of go through some of the things we've seen in our first year of this study. There's been a lot of interest in cover crops, not just the single species, and the benefits of those have been pretty widely documented. But there's been an increase, especially around the Corn Belt, in looking at using mixtures to kind of double up on some of those benefits, whether it's adding in extra legumes to get some more nitrogen fixation and then mixing that with grasses to get some residue that those legumes won't provide, even adding tap roots to alleviate compaction. And there's been some research to suggest that adding those in, you can get a little bit more bang for your buck. And one of the things that we like about it is they're highly customizable. There's not a one solution available. You don't just buy one mix that's going to fix your problems. You can pick what works for you for the producers, and that seems to be a really attractive feature for the producers. So some of the main cover crops that we looked at, we're looking at summer cover crops in central Oklahoma. So we looked at millets, either pearl millet or German millet, some sorghum Sudan, and then kind of a variety of legumes. Cowpeas, mung beans, forage soybeans. It's one of the longer season soybeans. And then sun hemp. And that one's gotten a lot of attention lately because it has the reputation for being able to fix a lot of nitrogen. And so for our purposes, we wanted to add that in to see if we could see any of those benefits. And so this is kind of our very messy layout. The cowpea and sun hemp, those were 100% seeding rate for that mixture in that that first mix. So those were 100%. So that's the full seeding rate for both species mixed together. And then the rest of these, they're just broken up. If it's a mixture with five species, each species comprises a fifth of that mixture. And then down here, we're comparing those to our UAN treatments, our just traditional fertilizer treatments. All of these got fertilizer applied pre-plant, and then the rates on the UAN, those are what was applied top dress. And so these have either a single species, like cowpea, a mixture of legumes, solid grasses in a mix, and then kind of a mix of legumes and grasses, like we were talking about, to see if we could get a kind of double dip in some of the benefits. So what we've done so far, we've had kind of a complete year. We just harvested we just planted our second ear of wheat. The first cover crop group was planted in July of 2013. We terminated that in August of 2013. And like I said, we applied starter fertilizer to all of these plots because we're not really aiming to replace fertilizer in these systems. That for our area, that's not really feasible at this point. So we're just looking if maybe we can get a little bit of supplemental benefit from them. And so we applied pre-plant fertilizer, planted our wheat in October. We went back in March around green up, vegetative growth to top dress, and harvested our first crop of wheat in June of 14. We planted our second cover crop in July, terminated that around August. We were trying to shorten some of our season. We had a little bit too much growth in the first year, and so we decided rather than going by calendar days, we wanted to go by biomass height. To try to limit some of the residue complications we ran into. But the way rainfall worked out, they had about the same growing time. We planted our wheat just a couple weeks ago, and so far we're hoping to have a good season so far. We collected our soil samples. We took deep cores with a Giddings hydraulic probe, and we took these following cash crop harvest around mid-February, at wheat planting, and then one that's not there is prior to cover crop planting. So we wanted to have kind of that snapshot of what's going on during the season. And then all of these were analyzed for moisture, bulk density, nitrate. We took surface composites to check to see, make sure our fertilizer recommendations are still in line, we're not getting too far off on pH or anything like that. So the biggest difference we saw was rainfall. We had half as much in 2014 as we did in 2013 for a cover crop season. So that translated into kind of a little bit of difference in some yields, but there was no statistical significance. So we kind of lumped them all together, and what we see is that our solid, our cowpea and sun hemp mixture consistently produced the most biomass. Our mixture with cowpea, sun hemp, buckwheat, millet, and that forage soybean, those two were our consistent high yields. So the interesting thing was the grasses tended to fall along that bottom range, but around the middle, this cowpea, mung bean, with the sorghum Sudan and pearl millet, those tended to be kind of intermediate to low, and it just kind of depends on the season. The nitrogen in the biomass, again, most of it was in those top two mixtures. Those each year, those had the highest amount. And then, as kind of expected, the grasses tended to have the lowest amount of nitrate in there. And this is kind of a snapshot of the sampling periods for the soil moisture, because one of the biggest concerns for producers in our area is, if I plant these summer cover crops, am I setting myself up for failure for my wheat crop? And so we wanted to be able to tell them either yes or no or maybe. So in July, at our planting of the first season of cover crops, as you would kind of expect, our cover and fallow treatments all start about the same. There's a little bit of differences deeper, but nothing really statistically significant. In September, when we planted our wheat, at the surface, the cover and fallow were about the same. But we're starting to see some differences in that subsoil. We're starting to see that cover treatment is a little bit drier than the fallow. But when we went back in February, a little bit before warmed up and it really started to take off, we started to see a little bit of the cover crops catching up somewhat. At least at the surface, they were a little bit wetter than the fallow treatments, but at the subsoil, we're starting to see they're still a little bit drier. But in June, after we harvested, there's really not much difference at all. And so with especially in that deep profile, that 100 centimeter, it looks like maybe the cover crops are allowing a little bit better deep infiltration of rainfall. But we're hoping to be able to tease that out as we keep going and have another year or two to this study. And the interesting pieces for the soil nitrate, so these soil samples were taken at planting this year. So a couple weeks ago, we took our surface samples to compare nitrate levels. And what we really were happy to see was that the solid legume species, or the solid legume mixtures, weren't really all that different from our from the fallow fertilizer treatments. And so, at the very least, those legume mixtures aren't hurting us any. We're not really losing anything that way. I will say that these are following pretty good yields on biomass and a 25 bushel yield wheat crop, so I can't say we had a bumper crop or anything that had great uptake. So we're hoping to see some of this play out in yields as we go forward. And so just to kind of compare what some of these mixtures look like, on the left here we have cowpea and sun hemp in our solid, in our two species mixture, and then the sun hemp, cowpea, buckwheat, millet, some of those grasses and legumes mixed together. And you can't really see a whole lot of difference as far as any nitrogen deficiencies or anything until you look into these. The grasses, if it contained grass in any mixture, even if it had two or three legumes in it, it was a lot more yellow than any of our solid legume species. And so we're thinking that we're going to see a lot more of that come into play. But for our first year, we're pretty happy to be able to see something, even if it's not translating into biomass yield, crop yield. We're setting ourselves up to find something cool. Again, we had no differences in yield either between cover crop, fallow, anything like that. And again, part of it, we had a late freeze in April, and that could have really hurt us. So some of those control plots might have been bumped down a little bit more. We had no differences in biomass produced, even with half of the rainfall. So we're not really seeing any benefits that are being translated into yields, but at the same time, we're not really hurting yields that we can see so far. So, like I said, the highest soil nitrate were in those fallow treatments, but the lowest soil nitrate was in those in the plots that all contain grasses. So we're hoping that as we go forward, we'll be able to tease out a little bit more of these differences, but we're pretty excited about what we've found so far. Overall, again, no hurt. We're not hurting yield. We're not really helping yield. We haven't seen the problem of soil moisture depletion hurting wheat crops, and that has been kind of a big selling point so far for a lot of our wheat producers. There's been a little bit of, hesitate to say propaganda, but I don't have a better word for it, that cover crops don't use that much soil moisture. And in a rain-fed, dry-land cropping system in central Oklahoma, that's a hard sell. So if we can at least say that it's not going to hurt our yields, it's not going to hurt our soil moisture, or it's nothing that we can't recover from, then that's a pretty big selling point for us. And then adding the grasses in, you're going to have to play those benefits. You're going to have lower nitrate, but if you need that extra residue cover to remove any threat of erosion or anything like that, while it's really customizable and it's great to get those extra benefits, it might just be kind of a cost-benefit analysis for the producer to decide what they want to add, what benefits they really want to gain out of this. One of the problems we came into was termination. Mixing long season and short season, those short seasons are going to go to seed a lot faster than those longer season species, which it depends on who you talk to. That could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. You could be creating a self-seeding cover crop, but in general, we don't really want those extra weeds in there. We don't want it to go to seed and have that in there. And then mixing the grasses and legumes, it's hard to get the right herbicide to be able to control those, to get them to get them killed before planting. So it's a learning experience, and so you kind of have to play around with it. There's no one set rate that's going to fix everything. And so, like I said, we're hoping to get a couple more years of data to tease out some of these differences and some of these things that we're seeing. And with that, I will take any questions that you guys might have. Yeah.
How did your growing season moisture precipitation compare to average?
Both years were a little bit above average, even though 2014 saw about half. We were still doing pretty good compared to what we normally see during the summer.
Tracy, we know where wheat was falling cover crops that the vigorous or the growth of the wheat during the winter was way behind what it was where it didn't fall cover crop. Did you see that? Do you think that may help the cover crops catch up where it was maybe not the cover crops increasing infiltration, but maybe it was the wheat pulling moisture out where it's a little bit more bigger? Did you notice any of that in your plots?
I can't say that we did, but we also had a lot of weed pressure, and that's where that having those mixtures of species and having that grass, the millet seemed to create a really dense residue layer. So we tried to figure out if there was any difference in weed pressure or anything like that, but I can't say that there was any difference in vigor or anything. We have some green seeker readings that we're going to compare to see if we can tease something out of that, but visual observation, not that we've seen so far.
Got time for another question?
Continuous winter wheat the standard cropping system in central Oklahoma?
Yeah, it tends to be either continuous winter wheat for either grain only or dual purpose. There's a few producers that do graze out. It just kind of depends on what they're going to make more money on, either the cattle or the wheat. And there's been a fairly good adoption of going to a wheat canola rotation, and so we do have another project that's looking at some of that, but the predominant cropping system so far is continuous wheat. Yeah.
What about IP continuous for sun
hemp? For the sun hemp, it was the Tropic Sun.
And so if you've got producers that are putting canola in their rotation, did you have the tillage radishes in
Yeah, we did.
So are you worried at all about disease bridging with that multi-species thing in Nebraska and the cover crop and canola?
With that, for the other project that we have where we are looking at those rotations, we're adjusting the cover crop mixtures to what it's going to follow. So the tillage radish wouldn't go in right before.
All right, let's end it right there. Let's thank Tracy for her presentation.